This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Multiple states led by Republican lawmakers are undoing child labor regulations in what seems to be an unimaginable trend in the United States. According to the Economic Policy Institute, at least 10 states introduced or passed laws rolling back child labor protections in the past 2 years. In a story for Yes Magazine, writer Marianne Deneen says, quote, bolstering federal legislation on child labor is the best way to prevent children from being forced into the workforce. We turn now to Betsy Wood, instructor of American history at Bard College. She's the author of Upon the Altar of Work, Child Labor and the Rise of a New American Sectionalism. And she was a source for Deneen's story about child labor in Yes Magazine. Welcome to the program, Betsy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So when we think about child labor, I mean, there have been so many times when I've said things like, well, this is why government regulation is important, because, you know, we outlawed child labor and those sorts of things are unacceptable now. And here we are in 2023 talking about child labor being made legal again. So let's look at the history of why it was so unimaginably horrible that we outlawed it. Tell me a little bit about some of the turning points in American history that led to child labor being outlawed, at least on a federal level in the United States.
Yeah, it is almost unimaginable what's happening today. I think most people imagine that child labor in the United States isn't an issue anymore. And so when we hear child labor, we tend to think of it as being a problem that exists in other countries. We think of it as a global problem in supply chains, but we don't necessarily think of it as being a problem in the United States. Historically, it has always been a problem. And now that this issue is getting more attention, I think people are starting to become interested in this history. Historically, the issue of child labor was actually very contentious, and it took a really long time for reformers who cared about this issue to get federal legislation. There was a battle that lasted for about 100 years prior to the passage of the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act, which is still the basis of federal child labor protections in the U.S. And that is the law that is now under attack, that's being challenged and undermined at a state level. Historically, that is what has happened. It has been a federal-state tug of war, so that the question of federal legislation was always the sticking point for reformers that wanted to outlaw or restrict the practice of child labor.
The family farm and these days big agriculture are sites where child labor has historically and even more recently in modern times been found. So tell me a little bit about that. Today we have undocumented immigrant youth in particular from Central America. The New York Times did a huge expose about how some of the children from the border have ended up in these farms. But historically, how was child labor, how were children exploited in American farms?
Yeah, unfortunately, agricultural child labor is one of the biggest loopholes in the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. So many reformers were disappointed with the Fair Labor Standards Act because it focused on industrial child labor. That had been what the reform movement wanted to regulate for many, many years. However, agricultural child labor came to be a problem as well on larger farms. It was a problem in the South. It was a problem, as you stated, the most recent New York Times article had an expose about how it remains a problem today. And a lot of that is because of the loophole in the Fair Labor Standards Act that allows for agricultural child labor to be largely unregulated. And one of the reasons that reformers had so much trouble in getting protections for agricultural child labor is because of this idea of the wholesome family farm. The idea that labor happening by children on farms is under the protection, under the aegis of parents and families, that it's happening within the context of a family farm. Now, we know that that isn't the case. I mean, we know that migrant child labor is happening on, you know, large corporate farms that are very dangerous. We know that, you know, this wholesome image isn't something that needs to continue being used to prevent regulation. And yet it's such a potent idea that it has prevented protections. And there's a history behind that, going all the way back to the 1920s, when reformers were well on their way to amending the United States Constitution with the Child Labor Amendment. This amendment would have given Congress the power to regulate the labor of children, and it wouldn't have restricted it just to industrial child labor. Congress actually passed that amendment, and it was going to the states for ratification, and reformers were really excited. They had the backing of essentially the entire political establishment, and they believed, they were very confident that it was going to pass, but the opposition to prevent that amendment back in the 1920s basically used the argument about the family farm to defeat it. They, you know, led by business groups such as the National Association of Manufacturers, the Southern Textile Industries. These are not family farm organizations. These are big industrial organizations. They sent literature out to rural farm families informing them of this amendment and how it was going to prevent their own children from doing chores on the family farm. And this message was so powerful and effective that it persuaded enough states to reject this amendment. And so there never was a child labor amendment to the Constitution because of that campaign. And we see similar arguments that still happen today.
So in addition to the fact that we've seen child labor exploitation increase in the last few years alone, you know, we're seeing because of the tightening labor market, et cetera. In addition to that, we now have Republicans sort of wanting to push it along in states. So, you know, aside from the fact that there are federal regulations, notwithstanding the loopholes around farm work, there are states like Iowa and Arkansas with Republican leaders basically saying, well, let's deregulate this because it's just too much of a burden. I mean, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, who we remember from the Trump administration, she was, of course, Trump's press secretary. She called the protections for children in the labor market, quote, burdensome and obsolete. And, you know, Republicans are often raising these ideas like, oh, well, we should make it legal for kids to do babysitting or lifeguarding because it gives them good work experience and life experience and prepares them for adulthood. And of course, all of that is true, but these aren't the kinds of jobs I think that Republicans are really thinking of when they are decimating child labor laws. So are you worried by the trend that we're seeing in states like Iowa and Arkansas?
I do find it concerning. It's not surprising to me. So, you know, if you look at the history of opposition to child labor regulation, you know, it has a very consistent message about the free market, about the importance of not having too much federal government intervention in the economy, you know, arguments about the moral value of labor and how it teaches young people important values when they work. These all have a very, very deep history in the United States. And I don't find it surprising, I guess, to hear these arguments being revived. It is surprising to see a kind of a movement almost across these different states attempting to kind of coordinate their efforts in deregulating child labor. But from a historical perspective, I see it as part of a bigger picture, kind of a vision of the economy, one that is a hands-off, you know, government approach to the economy, child labor being kind of an entering wedge for deregulation, and eventually, you know, the argument that we don't need a Fair Labor Standards Act at all, minimum wage laws, all of that, which is horrifying to think of. But, you know, I don't think that we're too far away from, I mean, this is, it's something that has come up, you know, not just in the last 2 years, but, you know, in the 1980s, we saw arguments about child labor. In the 1990s is Newt Gingrich. So, you know, it isn't something that just sort of sprung up in the last 2 years. I think there's just more confidence and ambition in these most recent attempts.
Did the loopholes in federal legislation around farm work basically leave open the question of child labor so that Republicans can now push those loopholes wide open at the state level? And if that is the case, then is the solution to protecting children strengthening federal law?
I think we have to look at federal law. That's always been, I guess, the way to solve this issue has been to have a federal standard. You know, one of the problems is that there was always so much variation among the states in terms of child labor protections that it really frustrated reformers. It's the reason they started pushing for a federal standard as early as 1906. The first attempt at a federal standard was something called the Beveridge Bill. It failed in 1906. There wasn't enough support for it. There was another attempt at a federal standard in 1916 called the Keating-Owen Act. That one actually passed Congress, but it was declared unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court, which at that time was a very pro-business, anti-regulation Supreme Court. There was another attempt in 1919 to use a tax. It was called the child labor tax, and it would have taxed the goods produced by child labor. That one also passed and was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. So it wasn't until, you know, the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act and a Great Depression that caused the country to finally come together and agree on this legislation, and the Supreme Court to also finally go along with the constitutionality of it. So that battle, you know, that battle has a very long history, and I think it's still with us today how hard that they fought for it, because now we see it coming under attack. And I do think trying to bolster federal legislation is something we have to look at. I know there is legislation being proposed, such as the CARE Act, which has been circulating for a while now. It just hasn't ever gotten enough support.
That's right. And in the story by Marianne Dineen that you were quoted in, you can find out more about the CARE Act, the Children's Act for Responsible Employment and Farm Safety, introduced by Representative Lucille Roybal Allard in California. She's introduced it many, many times during her career. And, you know, surprise, surprise, we don't see action on it. The issue of children being exploited in the workplace, you know, is one that seems like a no-brainer to many of us. But it also, unfortunately, isn't one that gets seen as much through the class of labor rights. And I'm wondering if we can end on how children's vulnerability in particular make them sadly the perfect kind of worker for conservatives, one that's not going to rise up against labor violations, that may be very vulnerable, particularly if they're immigrant or undocumented, and are certainly not expected to try to form unions, right? And today we're seeing a lot of union resurgence, and so, you know, they make the perfect exploitable worker, right?
Right. I mean, there is a long history of that as well, and reformers creating all kinds of literature to try to point this out as something that the public really needs to be aware of, that they're not in a position in the same way to stand up for their own rights or to even know what their rights as workers are. It's one reason that labor unions were always part of the fight to regulate and end child labor, because they were very much aware of how it was undermining their own efforts to get higher wages, to get better protections and better working conditions for adult workers. And there's always sort of been that back and forth between, you know, employers using young workers that were more vulnerable, more easily exploited. At the same time, there is a history of young people fighting back. And I think that should be stated as well. There's a very famous 1899 labor strike of newsboys in New York City that stood up to a very powerful newspaper industry. And so I don't think young people should be underestimated as well.
That's a really good point to end on. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Betsy, we'll link to the story that you were quoted in at Yes Magazine. Is there a website that you'd like to give out about your work or point out anywhere online that people can follow you?
Well, you can check out my book, University of Illinois Press, Upon the Altar of Work. That would be amazing if people wanted to do that.
Thank you so much, Betsy, and good luck to you.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Betsy Wood. She's an instructor of American history at Bard College and the author of Upon the Altar of Work, Child Labor and the Rise of a New American Sectionalism. She was a source for Marianne Deneen's story about child labor in Yes Magazine. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.